titles. We'll be talking about the number 70 for the first and second assembly today. And this was more of a study exercise for myself than it has been for probably just for a good topic for us to consider. But over the past probably few weeks, we've been talking more and more about different passages that have brought the number 70 to context. I know we've had some really good sermons brought up and some good classes over the years about numbers and as far as how they're used in the Bible, and we've had some very good conversation and classes about that. Number 12, the number 7, the number 6, just all kinds of different numbers in between there and what they mean. But because I've come across this so many times, I wanted to do a lesson that was focused on this number. But besides that, just looking at the passages, one of the things that and I decided to do this particular lesson based on something that Jim Grushon said in his last time he was out here, and I think he's mentioned it both times that he's been with us, and that was the fact that whenever we read Scripture, we need to be very careful that we go around to all the parts above and below the text that we're talking about, because often, as he mentioned, the same thing that we've talked about many times before, you have the word therefore or but and those kind of things, and as we've talked about in class before, much of Scripture that's divided into chapter and verse has nothing to do with the text itself, but is just a way to analyze that. So the number 70, we're going to be thinking about that. I'm really going to try to keep my comments down to a minimum because everything that I've talked about is pretty much captured in the lesson here. And if I start being wordy, we're going to run short on time. So let's get started. So the things, 70s in my life, if you want to follow along, and I apologize to the kids, they usually like the pictures I have. It's all text today, but try to take some of the metaphor out of here if you can. So 1970, first 70 that we're going to look at today, that was the year that I was born. So that may make some of you feel old, some of you feel young, but I'm sorry about that. Growing up in Ohio, two of the most important interstates in the United States, this part of the country, is I-70 and I-75. I-70 is back and forth east to west in the United States, and 75 north and south from Florida up to Michigan. But it was I-70, besides the airplanes, that took my parents to Colorado, where I was born, and took me back to Ohio twice when I was very young, shortly after birth, and then we were out there for a short time later on when Dad had a job out there. Another 70 is the just talking about I-70. It's considered one of the first in the United States as far as interstate highways. That term was new back in when it was created. 1956 was when it was began, and Interstate 70 from the East Coast out to Utah is now 2,151.43 miles long. I'll let you do the conversion to kilometers yourselves. Stretching the use of 70 out a bit, and I tried to stick to just uses of 70, not 75, 73, or 70,000, whatever. I've tried to stay with the number 70 for this lesson, but stretching it out a bit, if I got it correct, he'll get on me if I didn't. My dad, Roger Sr., was in the U.S. Army, Company B, Ranger, 75th Infantry Airborne. So he was in the 75th there, so just give me a little bit of grace if you would, please. And even though it hasn't been the case for that long, I remember 55 was the speed limit when I was a kid. It was moved up to 65, and everybody said everybody was going to die. Now it's 70, and everybody's complaining about the speed limit not being fast enough until you get to the Indiana-Ohio border, and then it jumps back up to 80 and is on and off across the country. But currently, as far as I know, 70 miles per hour is the max freeway speed in Ohio today. And I know I'm squeezing in some low ones on here on the board. Hopefully you can see that. Interestingly enough, most humans feel comfortable at a temperature around 70 degrees. I think if you go to most people's houses and you look at the temperature and see where they have it set for, most of them are a degree or two away from 70 if they're not right on 70. And it's just interesting how, as a people, we are like that. So over the past several months, as I just described, I'm just going to put the text up there and let you read it with me. Over the past several months, the number 70 has come up on our Bible studies, in sermons, in conversations, and in many of my Bible readings over and over. I thought it would be interesting to dig up all that I could on this number and the events that surround it in Scripture, and that's what we're going to be looking at today. One of the things I thought was so good about when Jim was doing lessons, and this has been true probably for everybody that preaches for us, is they'll talk about a passage, and I'll start reading around that passage just to kind of get context. And I'm totally interested in the story because even though I've gone through the Bible a couple times, there's so many things that I've either forgotten or didn't pay attention to. So maybe you have today as well. So today we are going to look at instances of the number 70. That's going to be our focus. But what I'm going to do after we talk about that specific passage, we're going to look at the passages around those events, looking at basically the start to finish of each chapter and the circumstances. And hopefully they'll encourage us to study a little more about each chapter featured. And I will tell you, I got a lot of study in this, just trying to dig this up for myself. But after I've got it done and read through it, I want to go back so badly to each one of these things, because there's like a lesson in pretty much everything that I mention. According to the New King James Version of the New Testament, or a New and Old Testament, there are 98 instances of 70 used in Scripture, and here are some. So we're just going to go through these. I'm going to have the passage at the top, and then I'm going to quote that. I've underlined the word 70 where it's found in the context of the Scripture, and then we're going to go from the first verse to the end of the chapter, just summary. I'm going to try to keep it very simple. So Genesis chapter 11, verse 26. Now Terah lived 70 years, and he begot Abraham, Nahor, and Haran. So what's going on in that chapter, Genesis 11? Well, remember going back up to the very beginning, the languages were confused, starting with verse 7. The Tower of Babel is mentioned in verse 8. And it says the people were scattered abroad over the face of the earth. One of the things I've talked about this with some of the students, and Kara and I have talked about this, I think we've had some discussions in the adult class too. We think about the Tower of Babel, we think about the confusion of languages, and we think about, oh yeah, today there are still a whole bunch of languages, and even in places where people are very close to one another. Why is that? Well, pay attention to the rest of the passage, because it also says it was at that point God spread them or scattered them abroad over the face of the earth. So there's two things I think that happened there. The languages changed, but people were spread out. And I can't tell you for sure if this is what was reason is, but people wonder why the people live all over the world when they started off in one place. And just something to think about. There are nine generations from Shem to Terah that were outlined in the chapter, Genesis chapter 11 here. And Lot's father, Haran, seems to have died before Terah, verse 28. So that is another thing I thought was worthy of study. We talk about Abram and how close he was to Lot, but we don't really explain why that closeness existed. And we see, if we just back up in the passage a little bit, we see Haran, or Lot's father, died. It seems to be before Lot was very old. So this basically uncle adoption of Lot here with Abram is very interesting. Another passage talking about the 70. Genesis chapter 12, verse 4. So Abram departed as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. We just talked about that relationship. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. So there are some hyphen numbers on there, but not a lot of them. So what happened in chapter 12? We back up a little bit. First of all, God commanded Abram to leave the place that he was at, verses 1 through 3. Past verse 4, we see Abram leaves with all of his stuff. I know that's not a very good word to put there, but that's basically, when you look at all the things that he had, that's basically what he took with him. Not just things, but animals and people too, all went with Abram. In verse 6, we see the introduction to the Canaanites. It's so interesting to look at the story of Abram and the Jews when they're wandering in places. They come back to the very same place that the promises were made to Abram and his children. So we see that in verse 6, the first introduction of the Canaanites, which will become so important in Scripture. We see God's promise to Abram in verse 7. And we also see that Abram builds God an altar near Bethel, which Bethel also would become very important to the people of God. That from verse 8. Continuing on in chapter 12, Abram's group heads to Egypt due to famine. How many times have we seen famine throughout the text of the Bible? And how many times has it actually led to things happening for the people of God? And Abraham comes up with bad idea there, of my own words, to protect himself and his wife from the Egyptians. And we talked about this in verses 10 through 13. Pharaoh was attracted to Sarai and then treats Abraham very well. And we see it wasn't just Pharaoh that was attracted to Sarah. We see that the governors of the Egyptians saw that she was beautiful and basically steered news of her to Pharaoh for themselves. Now from verses 14 and 16. We also see that Pharaoh was plagued by God and sends Abram away. So Pharaoh didn't know what was going on here, but God so cared so much about the situation for the sanctity of marriage that he actually intervenes in verse 17 through 20, plagues Pharaoh and gets him to the point like, get away from me. Why have you done this to our people? Genesis chapter 25, verse 7, this is the sum of the years of Abraham's life, which he lived, 175 years. So just something to think about. What happened in chapter 25? Abraham takes Keturah as a wife and has more children in verses 1 through 4. Isaac's inheritance and his stepbrothers are sent away from him to the east. So one of the things that we don't really look into too often is we talk about where the children of God were located and all these nations that basically interfered with them for so long, but there's not much mentioned about the east until you get to the point where there were those that came from the east to see Jesus when he was young. But another thing here, we see these people sent away in verses 5 through 6. We see in verse 7 through 11 that Abraham dies. Isaac and Ishmael, who were at one point against each other and just were not getting along, even though they were family, they bury Abraham in the cave of Machpelah. God blesses Isaac, and he dwelt in Beer Lahai-Roi. Come on. And we also see, interestingly enough, the genealogy of Ishmael. So at any point of Ishmael's life, you seem like that story could have just been done away with, but God made a promise to Ishmael and to his mom, and it was because he was the seed of Abraham. We see in verses 12 through 18 the genealogies of his family. Continuing on in chapter 25, we see the genealogies of Isaac, verses 19 through 20. We see that Rebekah is barren, and Isaac pleads with the Lord for her in verse 41. Another thing that's worthy of study. I think go back and look through the text of the Bible, Old Testament and New. Look at the people that were barren and look how they factored into the roles of very significant men and throughout the Bible. If any point that I can make for myself and for all of you is to remember when things look the bleakest, if we let God have his control, he will make things happen. It's just so hard for us to do. Esau and Jacob are promised and born, and they grow up in verses 21 through 27. Isaac and Rebekah have their own favorite children. Isaac likes Esau because he hunts game and he likes his food. Rebekah likes Jacob. And there was dislike there, but that was their favorite children. We see in verses 29 through 34 that Esau sells his birthright. I expect a lot of notes, and if you don't want to take a lot of notes, this will be posted on our site so you can copy it back down if you're interested in. I really do think this is just great study material myself. Genesis 46, verse 27. And the sons of Joseph were born to him in Egypt were two persons. All the persons of his house of Jacob who went to Egypt were 70. So we see that the 70 will start coming up over and over again. So what's the context of chapter 46? Well, we see in verses 1 through 4, Israel, who is also Jacob, leaves for Egypt. He sacrifices. He receives the promises of God, of Abraham, Isaac, and to him once more, just basically repeated to him. We see in verses 5 through 7 that Israel and his family head to Egypt. So we just to back up, Joseph was sold into slavery. He ends up being a leader in Egypt. There's famine, and basically his family goes out to get food and realizes who he is. But at the very end, we see the list of all of Israel's family in verses 8 through 25, nearly the whole chapter dedicated to just that family. And one thing that's not really mentioned in here, I think there's other places in the Bible text that we can get this, but we talk about Joseph a lot, we talk about Jacob a lot, we talk about the 70 people that were in Egypt and how those 70 people became the children of Israel in such great numbers. But sometimes the math doesn't add up. And how do we do that? Well, there were 66 people that came from Israel's family, sons and daughters and family. They went down. The plus one was Joseph. We just read above there in Genesis 46:27, the sons of Joseph were born to him and Egypt were two persons. So you got 66 plus one plus two. And obviously he had to have a wife, which we don't have much information on. So that would be plus one equals 70. So 70 people to Egypt, verses 26 through 27. And again, I'm going fast through these. I'm just challenging you to study it on your own time. In verses 28 through 30, Israel and Joseph are finally reunited. So even though Israel was going down there, he still hadn't seen Joseph until he actually gets there. Joseph updates Pharaoh about his family, where they're going to be, where they're going to stay. This is another thing worthy of study, something I don't know how I missed this. I've read this, I remember reading it, but I didn't look into it. The Egyptians see shepherds as an abomination. If you look at verse 34 of the text from chapter 46, it says they saw them as an abomination. I did a little bit of research on this. I didn't want to give you commentary definitions, but just some things that people think might be why the Egyptians felt this way. One, because they were nomadic. They didn't like that. The Egyptians wanted to be a fixed people. They wanted to have their own nation. They wanted to build up themselves, so they were stationary. Apparently, there was some disdain for nomadic people. Because they were not Egyptian, the Egyptians looked at everybody else as inferior. And maybe it was because they saw cattle as gods. We remember that that's one of the things that the Egyptians saw. Even though we're talking about shepherds, sometimes they can be intermixed between cattle and sheep or goats. Maybe because they prized Egyptians' shepherds as significant. I was curious about that, and the reason for that being is even though the Egyptians saw these nomadic people as shepherds, they didn't have respect for them. Because they valued cattle, because they valued milk so highly, they saw Egyptian shepherds as some of the most prominent people of the Egyptians overall. And so when they looked at other people trying to be what they considered shepherds, they felt they were inferior. These are just some things I dug up, so please look at it on your own. Genesis chapter 50, verse 3. We're looking at the number 70 again. 40 days were required for him, for such are the days required for those who are embalmed. And the Egyptians mourned for him 70 days. Another interesting thing here, we're talking about the Jews, the Jewish history here, but one of the most amazing things in secular history was the fact that the Egyptians embalmed people, and we still have people today that were alive even before this time, looking back in Bible days, because of the embalming techniques that the Egyptians had. So what's going on in chapter 53, or 50? 50, Israel dies, he's embalmed. 40 days of mourning, as we were just talking about, for those are normally the standard days for mourning, but Israel receives 70 days of mourning, verses 1 through 3. Joseph asks and is granted the right to bury his father Israel in Canaan per his oath. So remember, the Egyptians didn't like other nations very much. They wanted people to stay there. But because of Joseph's level of authority and because of the great things that he's done for Pharaoh at this time, he is granted permission not only to just leave himself, but to take much of his family with him to bury his father in a place that is not part of Egypt. And it says the trip to Canaan to bury Israel was a great gathering. Most of your versions will say in verses 7 through 9. So it was a pretty significant entourage. So they left the young people back in where they were living, but they took many others with them. Continuing on, mourning was noted by those of Canaan and Israel is buried as he's requested of his son. So he asked to be buried there. His sons followed his orders. Joseph's brothers feared retribution. So their dad is now gone. They remember what they did to Joseph, throwing him into slavery at the very beginning, wanting to kill him. And now they're basically answering for the crimes that they've done. They fear their brother because of his authority. As I wrote down there, they fear retribution for what they did, verses 15 through 18. Joseph takes that time to note the chain of events was dictated by God. So even though they did things to him, he had to deal with it. He recognizes God's involvement in it. Joseph and his life, as mentioned and detailed in verses 22 through 25. And even Joseph is embalmed and entombed because he was an Egyptian leader. He was dealt with as the Egyptians would any other leaders in verse 26. Now going to Exodus 24:1, and he said to Moses, come up to the Lord, you, Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel, and worship from afar. So what's going on in this chapter? I had to break it down a little bit because there's a few instances I mentioned in text here. But in verses 1 through 8 of chapter 24, we see Moses, Aaron, Nadab, Abihu, the 70 elders, called before the Lord, but only Moses is allowed to come near the Lord. So the rest of them are called up to a certain place, but only Moses can go past that. And we can see that in verses 1 through 2. In verses 3 through 4, Moses tells the people the words of the Lord and all the judgments. And the people say they will do them. Moses wrote the words of the Lord, built an altar, and with 12 pillars at the foot of the mountain. Another thing noteworthy there, not just an ordinary altar, but an altar that had symbolism. Amazing to look at some of these instances of Scripture. Moses offered the burnt offering. He sprinkled the blood on the altar and on the people and read the book of the covenant that he had written down. Also in Exodus 24, verse 9, then Moses went up also with Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel. So again, that number 70. In verses 9 through 18, we see Moses, Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu, And another thing I think is worthy of mentioning here in your study, if you take this these opportunities to study, we think of Nadab and Abihu, and we remember the bad things that they did, and we remember that they were killed. But the times that they were actually involved in very special events, because they were doing what they were supposed to be doing, I just think about that sometimes and pay attention to the scriptures that talk about that. Again, the 70 elders went back up to the mountain. They saw God, and it says below his feet, or the image of God that they saw, was paved a work of sapphire stone like the heavens in its clarity, verses 9 through 12. So just beautiful metaphors, not far different than what we see in Revelation. Moses and Joshua are called into the mountain where God gave Moses the tablets of stone, while the elders waited with Aaron and with Hur. The cloud covered the mountain. Every time I come across the word Hur, I think it is often referred to as Ben-Hur, which I believe Ben means the son of Hur. But we think about the movie Ben-Hur, and we can make some connections with these passages here just to follow along. Verses 13 through 15. Continuing on, verses 16 through 18, it says, "The glory of God rested on the mountain for 6 days. Moses was called from the mountain on the seventh day, and it says the sight of the glory of the Lord was like a consuming fire in the eyes of the children of Israel." So they know what's going on up there. They know who's up there. And what they see is just beyond belief by those people. And it says where Moses was for nearly 1.5 months. Said he, I believe he was up there for 60 days. Or I'm sorry, for, get it right. Whatever a month and a half is. 45 days or, no, sorry, whatever. You just have to do my math for me. I've not got it down there. But he was up on the mountain for a long period of time. Verses 16 through 18. 1.5 months is right, if I just can't add right. Numbers chapter 11, verse 16, continuing on our passages of number 70. "So the Lord said to Moses, gather to me 70 men, the elders of Israel." And this is in here a lot. I know it is, but it's important that we see this because there's a connection we'll even see into the New Testament as we get into the lessons for the second assembly. "Whom you may know to be the elders of the people, and the officers over them, bring them to the tabernacle of meeting that they may stand there with you." So what's going on in this chapter? In verses 1 through 3, the people complained and it displeased the Lord. His anger was aroused. Fire from the Lord burned among the people and consumed some of them in the outskirts of the camp. Moses prays to God and the fire was quenched in a place called Taberah, which also means burning. Verses 4 through 9, the people grumble about not having meat. Remember, they were fed by manna, but they've gotten tired of manna. They're like, oh, manna again. They don't want it. They want to have meat again. And they remember the foods of the Egyptians. They mentioned all the vegetables that they had and the succulents that they had there. All they have now is manna, which is described in the text in verses 4 through 9. Continuing on, chapter 11, Moses and the Lord grow angry due to the people's complaining. So not only was the Lord angry, but Moses was too. And God, the Lord tells Moses, or Moses tells God, how he wished it was not, he was not responsible for them, and ask how he is supposed to satisfy them. So he's getting desperate here. He's been intervening for these people, but it seems like their complaining has gotten to the point. He's like, I don't want this job. This job is just too much for me. He even asks for death over having to be put into this position in verses 10 through 15. So even this man of God, the friend of God, says, this is too much. I can't take it anymore. Just words to think about. Also in chapter 11, verse 24, "So Moses went out and told the people of the words of the Lord, and he gathered the 70 men of the elders of the people and placed them around the tabernacle." So God tells Moses in verses 16 through 18 that he will put Moses' spirit onto the elders so that he does not have to bear it all. So God was listening to Moses' complaints. Even though he was making a complaint, God was listening. Moses consecrates the people as God plans to give them more than they can stand because of their weeping. So God's planning on taking care of them, even though they won't stop complaining about things in verses 19 through 20. Moses even questions how God can provide the meat that these people are asking for. And I love what God says there. I just kind of paraphrase it there. And I says, God says to Moses, just watch. But that's basically what you see in the text of the verses there in 11, 21 through 23. Moses says, there's no way. We don't see any wild meat here. How are you going to feed this many people? And God tells him just to watch. Again, follow up with your study if you can. Numbers 11:25. "Then the Lord came down in the cloud and spoke to him and took of the spirit that was upon him," talking about Moses, "and placed the same upon the 70 elders. And it happened, when the Spirit rested on them that they prophesied, although they never did so again. I think this passage was even just read a week or two ago. Just amazing to see how this happened. So again, what's going on? Verses 26 through 35. We see the two men, the elders. It doesn't say that they were elders in the passage, but it talks about they were part of those that were called out, so they must be two of the elders of Israel. It says, two of the men remained in the camp where the people were and began to prophesy, and one man ran to tell Moses what the two were doing. And Joshua, who remember, Joshua went up to assist Moses, asked Moses to forbid them, verses 26 through 28. Moses questions Joshua's zeal and wishes that all people were prophets, then returns to the camp. So he takes no action, negative action towards these people. He just wishes that everybody was speaking for God, verses 29 through 30. Then it says in verse 31 and 32, a wind from the Lord brought quail from the sea, and the people gathered day and night. So many cases of miracles we see in Scripture, God's actually using the forces that exist and the animals and the life that exist to accomplish great things. I'll try to hurry up here. While they ate, God's wrath was aroused against the people, and a great plague occurred, killing some who yielded to the craving were buried at a place named Kibroth Hatava, or jealous, verses 33 through 34. Again, follow up with each one of these things if you have time. And it says, from that point, the people moved to Hazeroth in verse 35. In 33:9, Numbers, they moved from Merit and they came to Elim. At Elim, there are 12 springs of water and 70 palm trees. So they camped there. I'll try to shoot through here real quickly. But Moses documents the journey of the people as they left Egypt. Really, really important study there. We see so much of the world says those people never left Egypt. They never crossed the certain sea. There's no way you could trust this. Whenever you see genealogies and you see the places like this that Moses documents, all the places they stayed, it's down there for a reason. It's there for faith and it's there for trust. The details they have in verses 3 through 4 of after leaving Ramses, all the places they stopped there in verses 5 through 9, I'm not going to read all of them, verses 10 through 14, other places, 15 through 27 and more places, 28 through 37, even more places. Aaron told to go up onto the Mount Hor by the Lord, where he died on the 40th year after leaving Egypt. He was 123 years old when he died. So another situation, we see somebody that's in what appears to be good health, told to go someplace, and their life ends there, just showing the control for God. We see the king of Arad and the Canaanites here, the Israelites coming, other places where the people visit, God's instruction to Moses for the conquest of Canaan. So quickly, we're running short on time. So what can we take away from lesson one? I wanted to try to summarize what we've seen looking at the number 70, but most of all in the context of those passages. Even at an older age, God can do amazing things through you. I was going to change that to us, and I didn't like that, to you. Each one of you, no matter what your age is, God can do amazing things to you, and pointing at myself as well. Even when life seems to go against you, God can make you a leader of nations. Thinking about Joseph specifically on that one. God hears our challenges and he provides support. The focus on that statement right there was when Moses said, I'm having to do too much for these people, God. It's overwhelming me. And that's when the 70 elders were appointed for him to give him assistance. The Spirit of God will go to whomever he decides. When it said that Moses' spirit went from him to the 70 elders and they prophesied, that was just through the direction of God. And it's true for us today. The history of God's people is well documented, as I pointed out, when you see Moses and all the writings that he did. I think it's interesting if you go back through time and you look at historians and they say there is no way Moses could have wrote things because the history of writing wasn't even developed until after the time that Moses was on earth. And yet we have what we do. So I know there's not a lot of invitational items in a lesson like that. I really feel that both lessons are significant for the fact that they offer so much study opportunity for us. But the numbers and the way that God develops things are something that I think we can all look at. And even as I put on the list there, the things that we can take away from there, no matter what our age is, God can use us. God can take advantage of us. He's always there for us. His Spirit's available for us. And as individual Christians today, we can let God know that we need him, that we're thankful for him, and that we can do more with him. If we're not Christians, all those things that I read were about the people of God. Even though it was the Old Testament, It was the people of God, His children. That's what a Christian is today, the people of God. So consider your state in life as we stand and sing the words of the Imitation.